We're fortunate again tonight to have, and I say again because Lonnie's graced this studio many times, to have Lonnie Dupree joining us. And Lonnie, of course, a Cook County resident, but internationally known, renowned polar explorer, and now, as of the last 2 years, also a very renowned mountaineer. Lonnie, great to have you here on the Roadhouse again.
Thanks, Buck, and thanks, Bob, for having me on this evening.
Good to see you.
You know, Bob, when you gave the weather forecast, it said 30% snow. That means there's 70% no snow.
70%
that makes me
of the county
sad.
Will have no snow. That's exactly right. That's exactly
that
right.
That makes you really sad. Yeah.
It's just a matter of where you are.
Exactly.
Lonnie, welcome back to the Roadhouse. You have Thanks. Got a busy couple of days. Actually, you have a busy few months coming up. Tomorrow, you're going to be one of the featured speakers down at North House Folk School. You're going to be giving a talk about your Denali preparations.
Yeah, at 2 o'clock, I'm going to give a little talk on Denali. And then afterwards, at 3 o'clock, there's a group of us, Mark Terry, who's a documentary film producer, and Mike Link and Kate Crowley, who circumnavigated Greenland,
Superior.
Lake Superior. And then my good friend Paul Shirky from Ely, Minnesota, who mm-hmm. I went on an expedition way back in 1989 with, we're all going to, there'll be a little roundtable discussion about climate change.
Mm-hmm. So that's at 3.
That's at 3.
Down at North House Folk School.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's another exciting thing that's happening, and I believe it's coming out on 20th of December, and that's a brand new book, release of your brand new book.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you, that is a long, there's a long story there because... about 9.5 years ago, I fell off a roof the beginning of May, you know, prime time for carpentry season, of course, and I'm all laid up and broke. And so what I ended up doing was putting all my journals together over the last 20 plus years, on some of the, expeditions I've done over the years. And happy to say that we got a new book coming out called, Life on Ice, 25 Years of Polar Exploration. And, it just starts with, growing up on the farm and then going to Alaska commercial fishing and getting hooked on the Arctic. And then talks about Bering Bridge and some North Pole trips and circumnavigating Greenland and all the goofy stories that go with those, that kind of activity.
Isn't that amazing, though, that those little choices that you make and you don't think much of them at the time really lead you in a certain path, as they did
well,
for you?
Well, you know, I was never very good in school because every time you get me around in the middle of four walls, I just want to get outside, you know. Uh-huh. And so right after high school, I loaded up a 3/4-ton Chevy pickup with canned goods, and my cousin and I, we drove to Alaska for a 3-week vacation or to a little look-see, and ended up staying 3 years. Mm. And I was hooked on the Arctic then, and I've been going back ever since.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how many people out there wouldn't know about all the various expeditions you've done, but... It's pretty amazing how much time you've spent and how many successful expeditions that you've been able to put together over the years.
Well, back then it was, of course, long before the internet, mm-hmm. and long before Facebook and all mm-hmm. that stuff. So it was, even Greenland was before satellite telephone. And, satellite telephone just came out towards the end of that. And so getting the word out was more difficult, of course. And so a lot of those things just... were just a matter of whatever you could put in your journals mm-hmm. and write about it later.
Yeah. And, of course, when you mentioned Greenland, you and your cohort, our Australian, Johnny Holscher, our Australian buddy, were the first two to ever circumnavigate Greenland. That's a few years ago now.
That was a lot of... I was 38 when we completed that trip. I'm 50 now, but it was... It was an amazing expedition. I look back on that expedition of all the trips I've been on, and I really it really inspires me the most of all the trips I've done. And it was 22 months on the trail, 5.5 years of preparations, over $500,000 it cost. I mean, the days of funding these large expeditions, even the One World Expedition when Ann Possess and Eric Larson and I raised the money for One World Expedition, that kind of money isn't around anymore. I mean, it's more smaller expeditions, and like this Denali trip I'm about to take off on, and just a lot more condensed and smaller because it's just too expensive, these projects.
Now, you spent all those years kind of, it's not really a flat land, but it certainly isn't mountains, and that wasn't really on your horizon yet. In 2010, you made a first for you mountain climb, a very successful climb of Denali, which is the highest mountain in North America. What a jump that was.
Well, I have to thank you, Buck, for that, because you put that bee in my bonnet. And so I got really intrigued about mountain climbing because it there's a lot of attention to detail that you need to do to be successful in climbing mountains and survive. And so when you and I and Steve Pitchka and Tom Supernot went during our summer climb, which was in
2010.
That was, we did a pretty good job. I think we did a pretty good job of it because we didn't have a guide, and we managed to climb it. And I think we summited it in 13 days, mm-hmm. which, as fast as you can summit that, mountain and still climatize properly. And we got down safely. And although we were, pretty worn out, I would have to admit, it was nonetheless a great adventure.
And now, this year, as last year, following that successful trip, you made an attempt last January to be the first person to solo summit in January, Denali, which is some of the worst weather on Earth that you face.
Well, the summer we went, Buck, I've always along that entire route was thinking, okay, if I was to come back here and do it in the winter, I need to pay really good detail to the route and, you know, what my abilities were then to see if I could do it in the winter. And then I realized that after we were done, that it was a possibility, given my Arctic experience, that I might be able to do that. So, I managed to get up to 17,200 feet last year.
Which is the last camp.
Which is the last camp before summit. And I figured I needed 13 hours to go round trip. At that time of year, of course, it's quite dark. You only got about 6.5 hours of daylight. So that means I have to climb almost entirely to the summit in the dark, so I have light to come down, because coming down the mountain is the most dangerous part of any mountaineering experience, because you can't see your footholds and you have no handholds. So a lot of people think the most dangerous part is climbing. It's actually descending.
Mm-hmm. Now, it was very successful. You went up in rapid order last year in January, so you probably don't have that many things that go through your mind as far as doing things differently, but I imagine there are some things that you've reconsidered.
Yeah, of course, there's always things you want to fine-tune because your life depends on it. So it's I'm taking a lot less food because I found out that I took too much food last time based on my North Pole expeditions. A lot of high-calorie diets based on really extreme cold temperatures. But the problem with ascending a mountain is you have less oxygen to digest that food, and you don't have the appetite that you normally would have. So I'm taking a highly palatable diet, but less of it, about 1.5 pounds a day. And then my equipment is much lighter. I'm going with a lighter rope, lighter sleds, lighter all-around equipment.
You just wearing shorts and T-shirt?
Just, yeah, some Tevas and some long underwear. That's about it. Not a pretty sight, but I am taking a different route up this time. I'm taking the West Buttress all the way to 17.2, but I'm then taking a different route from there, which is a steeper, more vertical pitch of about 55 degrees. I'm using a double ice axe technique with front pointing with my crampons, going up fairly steep, because ascending, I can go up a steeper route safely, as opposed to kind of going kitty corner across the Audubon, which is at a 45 degrees, but it's the way your foot placement is makes it much more dangerous. So I'm going to go straight up and then come down the more gradual route.
Yeah, one of the differences for folks out there that aren't aware, in the wintertime, there's strong winds that blow that snow that we climbed in into blue ice.
Yeah, actually, when I was up there in Buck, when I was looking at the head wall that we climbed, that was full of snow that year, the winter was all blue ice. There was no snow whatsoever. So it was a little bit intimidating because if you start sliding and lose your footing, it's very hard to self-arrest, meaning taking your ice axe and digging it into the snow and stopping your fall, where the ice, it's pretty hard. If you don't self-arrest in the first few seconds, you gain so much speed you won't be able to self-arrest. So.
And at that level, there's a lot of feet to fall.
A half a mile. Yeah. You're pretty banged up by the bottom, I'm sure.
Yeah. For folks that don't know about last year's expedition, you had a kind of a unique way of spending the night up there. There's no tent involved.
Well, I use snow caves all the way up and all the way back because as I'm ascending, I can build snow caves along the way, and I can place supplies in those snow caves. And then when I leave those snow caves, I button them up nice and tight so I can and flag them. So when I come back down, I can utilize those snow caves without having to spend 2 hours to dig a new one, and my supplies are in there. So it's much better than a tent. If you bring a tent, you still got to dig a tent down. And the wind might blow it away anyways. So it's much better to be inside underneath the snow, more insulation property in the snow than a centimeter of nylon or less. And then, but I also got to take time that if I'm so tired that I can't spend the 2 hours to build a snow cave, I'm not going to survive. So I got to preserve enough energy at the end of a very long day that I can spend 2 hours digging a cave, because if you can't dig down, you're not going to survive.
Mm-hmm. What's your biggest concern in that climb now this year?
My biggest concern is coming down from the summit to 17.2. That's the most dangerous part of the expedition, is descending that area.
Will you descend the same 55-degree slope that you're going to ascend?
No. I'll come down a different route, the traditional West Buttress route, which is through Denali Pass and down the Audubon. Mm-hmm. Only because when I come down that way, because I'm right-footed, it's just more natural to me to come down. But if I'm ascending the Audubon, it's very awkward for me, because it's more tuned for a left-footed person. So I don't know if that makes much sense, but it's much easier for me to just go straight up double ice axing. I'm secure. I got 3 points of contact in the mountain at all times. I get up, and then on the way down, I come down a more gradual route with being right-footed, a little more sure-footed that way.
Yeah, it is hard to describe that Audubon angle, which changes the way that you climb, because now it's a 45 degree going up, but there's also the angle sideways.
Right, it's a compound angle, not just the 45, but you're going at an angle, so your ankles are quite stressed out. And they call it the Audubon because a team of German climbers fell off that. And
yeah,
they went fast, like an Audubon, like being out of the Audubon and right off the end of the mountain. And so it's a lot of people aren't found falling off that particular spot because there's a lot of crevices way down deep on the backside of Denali. So,
what kind of temperatures and winds do you expect to see in January up there?
I had winds of 85 miles an hour last time. I was sitting in my snow cave and I could feel the blocks being pulled off the top of my roof, and I was a little bit nervous, but I had layered about 2 layers deep of snow blocks on top of my roof just for that reason, and the first layer got pulled off by 85 mile an hour winds, but then they got when you got winds of that speed, usually the temperature's higher. It's usually like minus 10, minus 15. When it's really calm, it's usually the freezing temperature freezes the wind too. So like if it's 50 below, you rarely have high winds. And I had some 50 below earlier in the trip, but as I got up higher, it warmed a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, just a few weeks ago, we had one of the folks that you and I met when we were climbing, Walter Hampton, who has written an inspirational book about his climb, and actually his three climbs on Denali. One of his inspirations for climbing when he was young was reading the book Minus 148, which maybe you can tell folks how that it might have had an effect on you.
Yeah, Minus 148 is Art Davison was one of the first to climb Denali in 1968, I believe, in the wintertime. And it was a very cold expedition. They got stuck at Denali Pass, just above the 17,000 camp mark. And they were stuck in a little bitty snow cave. They just whittled out of with their ice axes just to get in there. But they all suffered frostbite on that trip. But as a team, they managed to make it back down. But it was a harrowing expedition, and it was just as documented then as it was as Into Thin Air by John Krakauer is now about Everest. So it was a
and -148 has to do with the overall cold, figuring in the wind and the cold.
Yeah. So that's cold.
That's. Yeah, which can happen at any time up there in the winter.
It can, because what happens is Denali is so high up that the jet stream often drops down. So if anybody's flown overseas or, you know, in the wintertime, you can see the temperature that they show on the monitor a lot of times is minus 60 to, you know, minus 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, that's what it is at the top of Denali often, because the jet stream drops down there.
You're going to be leaving here after this weekend and heading out to do some training in Colorado. So local folks won't see you after this weekend until February probably. And I believe you're leaving to go to Alaska sometime in later on in December. How can folks follow your expedition? What's the easiest way?
For lack of a better name, we just got a website called LonnieDupree.com, and it's just that people can follow the expedition through that. And we're going to be giving daily audio updates and blog updates with pictures each day. And also there's Facebook, too. You can go on and follow the project. Mm-hmm. We'll be also selling the new book, Life on Ice, there, as well as one of our sponsors, Fox River Socks, has generously given us thousands of pairs of very warm socks, the same kind of socks that I'm going to be wearing on Denali that we're selling as a fundraiser for the expedition, too.
Now, you'll have, as you mentioned, you'll have a similar ability on the website to follow you daily and with the photograph of the mountain.
Yep, we'll have a I'm being tracked by a spot beacon, so each day I'll send the signal out, and it will actually pinpoint me on a 3D map of Denali along the way, so you can kind of see how I'm progressing up the slope there. And and then of course audio updates. I can just call in with an Iridium phone, thanks to Buck's Radio Shack. I'm gonna send those audio updates probably every third day or every other day.
And your book again, now that's just being released, I think, on the 20th of December, but you're able to pre-sell that book to folks that would like to get a hold of one.
Yeah. Life on Ice can be purchased. I got a store on my website that people can just pre-order the book, and then Keen Editions, which is my publisher in Minneapolis, will then send the books out as soon as we get them in. And hopefully it'll be on the 20th. We're pushing for it. I got a few corrections I'm doing on photo captions, but it's supposed to go to the printer next week, and then they just need a couple weeks to get it actually out. And so
it sounds great. It sounds really interesting for folks out there too.
Yeah, it's good to get off my plate. Actually.
Yeah. So, and tomorrow now again, you're going to be at North House Folk School at 2:00.
Yep, North House Folk School at 2:00. I'm going to give a little talk about some of my past expeditions, but mostly about Denali and this upcoming trip, and then the climate change panel at 3:00.
Okay. And then, right, the panel at 3 o'clock. Well, Lonnie, I want to thank you so much for coming back here and joining us on the Roadhouse. And, of course, all of our best for this upcoming expedition. We expect to talk to you in February and see some great slides.
Well, thanks, Buck. Thank Bob. And I know you guys are both professionals in turkey preparation.
So, well, it takes a turkey to know a turkey, you know.